It has appeared in these papers, but the main result that I will present today is new work. So I will essentially focus on two issues. First, I will discuss how inflation, and in some modes internal inflation, arises as a prediction
in quantum cosmology. And then I will discuss, secondly, how when you view inflation in a quantum cosmological framework, one can calculate predictions for local observables without the need of a further measure beyond the one supplied by the wave function. Those predictions will depend on the different possible past histories of our life cone. And that's the no metaphysics part, okay? So at least no metaphysics as defined by Stephen, which is everything to our future. So a prime example of an observable of interest are the correlation functions of the temperature fluctuations in the microwave sky. And those correlation functions will receive contributions from various past histories. So we're interested in calculating those correlations in a Hubble volume. And the probabilities for these different contributions of those past histories will be calculated from the wave function of the universe. And in order not to offend my distinguished collaborators, I will adopt a no-boundary proposal, which says that the state, the amplitude of a tree configuration, a configuration of fields on a tree surface, is given by the sum over all regular metrics that match those that match that configuration on their only boundary. So the goal of my talk really is to discuss the connection between the wave function of the universe, which is the prime input in quantum cosmology, and local observables like CMB and isotropies. Of course, part of this connection is well known to all of you. The correlations on the microwave sky are at least in some range of wave numbers are connected to fluctuations of the gravitational potential on the last scattering surface. The CLs characterize those correlations. And theory enters when we take the expectation value of fluctuations of the gravitational potential. So normally we take that expectation value, usually in cosmology, we take that expectation value in a given homogeneous isotropic background with perturbations. And standard inflationary theory then predicts that predicts a form like this, where the amplitude is usually written as V over epsilon, where epsilon is the slow roll parameter, and there's a slight tilt in a polynomial potential, which is usually written like that. That's the usual story. But in quantum cosmology, it doesn't happen like that, because you don't have a given background. So the key result of my talk will be a generalization, a derivation in quantum cosmology of that expectation value. But as I said, in quantum cosmology, at best you get an ensemble of possible universes out of the quantum state. And each of the different possible universes will come with a certain probability. So in order to evaluate the expectation value of the two-point function of the gravitational potential at last scattering, which is what we need, we first need to identify what are the probabilities of the different possible universes. And in fact, as I mentioned, we need to identify the probabilities of the different possible Hubble volumes. We're interested in the past of our Hubble volumes. That's the amplitude that we'll end up. Once you have those universes, you better first check that inflation happens in those universes in order to have any chance of arriving at a realistic prediction.
predicting things is inflation?
No, indeed, you could have a different set of histories that also.
But because that's your assumption.
It's not assumption. No. It will turn out to be the case for this particular rate tension that I will discuss, but it's not an assumption. You need a state to evaluate that expectation value. You need a state of the fluctuations of the gravitational potential
in the different histories. And with the state, you can calculate the probabilities for different fluctuations.
The statement that you have a sum of probabilities, why don't you get interference between different universes with different values of the Hubble constant? Are you going to show us why you don't get interference?
Sure.
Okay.
So when you have all these ingredients in place, then schematically,
the result will look like this. The expectation value will be a sum, a weighted sum, over expectation values in different kinds of backgrounds, different kinds of cosmologies. This PI labels the weight of different kinds of Hubble volumes. So that probability, PI, is itself an enormous sum over different possible histories. Okay, so I will illustrate this before I go on. For instance, if you imagine you get inflation from a wave function, and you're working in a very simple model where the potential is just m squared phi squared, beyond a value of phi or phi sufficiently large, wherever you start, your observable predictions will be the same. So all those histories, imagine you get many histories of your wave function, their probabilities will be summed, and this will be the result of that sum. Okay? But that's the goal of the calculation, a result like that. Or that's what you would hope to get in quantum cosmology. Let me put it this way. And the reason I think it's interesting in the context of eternal inflation is that in eternal inflation is a regime where you also don't have a unique background. Dynamically, you generate Hubble volumes of many different kinds, at least in the interesting models of eternal inflation. So whereas this is a natural situation in quantum cosmology, it's forced upon you in the regime of eternal inflation. And that's the reason I believe that a framework of quantum cosmology which incorporates that possibility can be of help there. Okay, so I will illustrate this in the following model. So we take the no-boundary wave function, low energy gravity with a small cosmological constant, and a bunch of independent scalar fields. So the model you can keep in mind is just this one, where the other side of this potential, say, is lambda phi to the 4. You get different CMB predictions. What's our CMB's guy? That's a question I will discuss. So as I said, we first need the ensemble of cosmologies that you get out of that wave function. So let's start there. To get a handle on this wave function, one can evaluate it in the saddle point approximation, in which you look for saddle points that satisfy, on the one hand, the configuration of fields at the boundary where you're evaluating the wave function. So that's the scale factor, the value of the scalar field, the value of the perturbations, etc. And on the other hand, the saddle points must satisfy the defining feature of the no-boundary wave function. They must be regular at the saddle point. Those two things imply that the saddle points are generally complex solutions of the Einstein equations. And so the action of the saddle points will have a real Euclidean part and a complex phase.
On both sides of the eternal inflation boundary, you've got a final scalar field value.
Yes.
And so you're thinking about...
Finance get a few value you would be down.
Okay, so not past the value where you would internally, like, where you would get into self-reproduction.
Right, so I'm... Right, exactly. So when I eventually will evaluate the amplitudes for my observables, obviously I will fix the scale of yield configuration in a region which has been heated. Mm-hmm. Outside that region, anything is possible. But that's the physical situation of interest.
Okay, and so the wave function obeys the relativity integration. In a regime where, at a boundary, the gradient of the real part of the Euclidean action is much smaller than the gradient of the Lorentzian part, the Wheeler-DeWitt equation implies essentially classical evolution. The history will obey the usual Lorentzian Einstein equation. That will give a huge phase, and that will lead to decoherency. At early times, when this condition is not satisfied, there's not necessarily decoherence. The Wheeler-DeWitt equation also implies, the second ordering age, that the probability associated with this particular history, which is given by the real part of the Euclidean action, that this real part of the Euclidean action is conserved along the history. So once I have a classical universe, I can evaluate my wave function on whatever tree slice I like. I will get the same relative probability of different histories. So concretely, in models like this, what you need to find backgrounds is impose the regularity condition at the south pole of the saddle points. That leaves you with three parameters, namely the complex values of the scale of the different scalar fields, which for the purpose of this talk I will just treat as independent fields. And obviously you have to fix the final boundary conditions at the boundary where you evaluate the range. And then there are two main findings. For scale factors that are large, for large universes, in other words, you find that the saddle points which have the lowest action, therefore the highest probability, are those saddle points for which this condition is obeyed. In other words, when large universes are predicted to behave classically, it's a very trivial result, but it's good to get it out. You don't get all possible classical universes, because in order to satisfy this condition, you need a combination, you need a tuning of the phase of the scalar field at the south pole for each different possible absolute value of the scalar field at the south pole. And so what actually happens is that that tuning provides you with a one-parameter family, a slice through phase space of cosmologies.
Once you make the universe big enough, you're going to somehow see that that eternal inflation happens, that you like to make little regions, little heated regions.
But so only
is that consistent with saying that the evolution is classical? I mean, it seems like there's...
I'm just talking about the background for now.
Oh, okay.
This is just the background. This is a homogeneous field. When we add perturbations, obviously you're going to get probability distributions for different perturbed histories, and those will include eternal histories. Okay, so once you have identified the set of possible backgrounds, you can take Cauchy data at the boundary where you evaluate the wave function and evolve these data forward and backward to get Lorentzian histories. It's only at that point that you see what kind of cosmologies you got. And so a rather remarkable result in the case of the no-boundary wave function is that when you evolve those data at the boundary where you evaluate the wave function backwards to the past, you find the following behavior between the local Hubble rate of expansion and the values of different scalar fields.
these are five curves which correspond to a time evolution backwards in time of five different solutions, and you see they all lie on a narrow band where in fact h is equal to the square root of the potential. So it's a band that characterizes precisely the inflating cosmologies. So the conclusion is that in these specific models, that you can only get classical universes, big classical universes, through a period of early inflation.
The Lorentzian region here, is it at large part?
These are just Lorentzian histories. There's a distinction between the saddle points, which provide for you the approximation to the wave function, and the histories which I'm showing here. These are Lorentzian histories. You can extrapolate them backward and forward. And the only thing the wave function does is to assign a probability to each of those histories, Lorentzian four-dimensional cosmologies. So at very early times, the semi-classical evolution backwards in time may break down. That's what you see in the first one here going up. That curve going up leads to a Big Bang singularity. I'm going to ask me, well, these curves going down, what does that mean? These are histories which essentially in the past have a de Sitter-like bounds. So they're regular, they're perturbed, they're perturbations of these histories at early times.
So these are histories already weighted with the probability which you obtain from wave function, is it?
Yes, so but I will discuss those probabilities in a moment.
So do you just include every complex saddle that... I mean,
that's a good question. No, these are the dominant saddle points.
So do you use a contour of stationary phase? How do you decide? You just take whichever saddle has least action.
Yes.
So it has a real part, real part with least action. Smallest real part of the action.
Yes. So you can do, in these simple mini superspace models, you can do an exhaustive analysis and systematically find all saddle points.
And they always come in pairs, is that correct? Because doesn't the
complex
they
always come in pairs.
Always,
sure.
Yes. And so you just, and those pairs always have equal action.
Yes.
So you're always at a point where you have precisely two saddles that are both contributing?
You're right, but associated with the two saddles, there's one single history. So you add those two probabilities.
But often if I'm summing, for example, Euclidean instantons or something like that, and I have two which have the same action, I might worry about, that might cause me to worry.
Right,
you're saying because they're just complex conjugates of one another, I shouldn't worry.
It's a little bit the way the boundary wave function is defined. Okay, so this is just schematically.
Phrasing this result differently, then a boundary wave function provides you with a slice through classical phase space, and it selects those histories, those cosmologies which inflate. That's a non-trivial result because you wouldn't get it with a flat measurement phase space. So going back to our model, we have these two sides, and obviously we know that those two sides of the potential for suitable parameters admit inflating cosmologies. But we can have another side of the potential, or think of a multidimensional potential with a different side where the slow roll condition is not satisfied. If we are going to predict contributions of different past Hubble volumes to our observations here in the minimum, the contributions from sides of the directions of the potential that don't admit inflating solution is going to be zero in this approximation. Okay? So we've already selected certain potential directions in field space.
Before you diverge from...
I'll come to that. Of course, the histories in one direction are labeled by the absolute value of the scalar field at the south pole of the instanton. That value is closely related to the number of default links. Okay. So I labeled the histories
by phi naught, which is the value of the scalar field at the south pole of the instanton. That translates, roughly speaking, into a number of default links phi naught squared.
You get large equal things?
Yes.
Okay.
So, viewed, this is a slight digression, viewed in a sort of larger landscape type of context, the fact that we only get classical universes via empirical inflation can be viewed as a vacuum selection principle. You select the boundary state will select for you those patches
of a complicated landscape potential where these low road conditions hold. So here, for instance, if that's all steep, that flat direction, that will admit regular no boundary saddle points, which provide for you members of an ensemble of cosmologies. Yes, that is via its probability, of course, to which I will come. So this still leaves us with many different types of cosmologies, and hence many different types of histories that contribute to local observables, which we're interested in. Firstly, as shown here, depending on the value of phi naught, you get different amount of inflation. You get either eternal expansion, recollapsing universes, bouncing in the past. Then, depending on the site, you will get a different CMB spectrum. So we have a range. And to get to predictions, you need to evaluate the probabilities of each of these histories, which is what the real part of the Euclidean action does for you. So for instance, for the m squared phi squared side, but in fact the result is fairly general, the probabilities are the exponential of minus 2 IR. IR stabilizes along the history, and you see that the probabilities sharply decay towards large values of phi naught. So at the level of cosmologies, at the level of four-dimensional histories, the no-boundary wave function favors histories that start either here or there, but with fairly low values of phi. And generally, the probabilities, well, the action is proportional to minus 1 over the value of the potential evaluated at phi naught, in other words, the value of the scalar field of the south pole.
Sorry, you said that you favor inflation, and now you're favoring the smallest possible value of phi. So
no,
is it an around at some point?
So there's a cutoff here.
Yeah.
Beyond, but for values of phi naught smaller than that cutoff, you don't find any solution. You cannot satisfy the classicality conditions at late times. Okay? And so that value of phi naught turns out to be somewhat larger than the critical value where the slow-roll conditions hold. So you at the level of histories, you have a few defaults of inflation from either side of the question.
So if this is all
mini
superspace, you're not allowed to
see
homogeneities
and
all of
that?
It's later.
So so somehow you're quantifying how classical a space-time is?
This is just the result of the procedure I sketched briefly before.
Yeah, but you said you need that. The gradient of I to be much less than the gradient of S.
Yes.
And so the ratio of the two depends on how possible.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. No, it's worse than that. You can't even find real boundary data for values of for whatever phase. So you can pick the phase, okay? You at least have to get to some real classical universe, and you can't even do that. Okay, so far for the probabilities of four-dimensional histories, but as I mentioned at the beginning, the real probabilities that we're interested in are probabilities for different kinds of Hubble volumes. Those are the probabilities that enter in the expectation values that turn the CLs. And so there's an important phase space factor that connects the probabilities for different kinds of Hubble volumes to the probabilities for different kinds of histories that I've been talking about. And that comes about simply from the fact that there, although we do our observations in a Hubble volume, the number of possible locations of that Hubble volume is different in the different members of the ensemble of cosmologies that we have, because they don't all have the same volume of the reheating surface, of course. So there's a connection which, in at least as long as the history is not too large, and I come to that regime in a minute, the connection between the probabilities for the different histories and the probabilities pi that enter for the different paths of, our, of one Hubble volume, there's a connection that goes, that involves a volume rating of the possible locations of the Hubble volume where we can be, so to speak. Okay, so volume, there's a volume weighting that connects probabilities for histories to probabilities that are relevant for observation, by which I mean those PIs. That volume weighting doesn't have a major effect on the distribution unless the direction of the potential admits a regime of eternal inflation. For a polynomial potential, there's the condition for eternal inflation. When the potential goes up sufficiently far so that that condition is satisfied, at that point, the volume weighting will become important and turn that probability distribution around. So... Right, so I have in mind that we evaluate the correlations of the temperature fluctuations on the CMB sky on a surface of homogeneity. That's the gauge invariant statement. In a bigger universe, there are more Hubble volumes where we can be, and that favors those.
That has an effect, that's a phase-based factor that enters if I'm asking the probability for different Hubble volumes. Okay, take a universe with two Hubble volumes and three Hubble volumes, ask where a Hubble volume can be, there's an effect. Okay, so now I will go back to my picture with these imaginary directions coming out. We've already excluded the non-inflating direction of the potential. This result says that the dominant contribution to local observables when we are down at the minimum, will come from those directions of the potential that admit a regime of eternal inflation. Okay, the other directions will have a far lower probability, as you can see here. Okay, the regime of eternal inflation provides you with a dominant contribution. Vice versa, and now I go back, well, there, that picture. If the potential is such that none of the directions has a regime of eternal inflation, then one must conclude, I believe, that the no boundary wave function does not explain our observations, because it favors the dominant contribution to our CMB anisotropies will come from histories with a few e-folds, which is clearly ruled out. So the no-boundary wave function only agrees with, or only explains, potentially explains our observations when there are directions that have a regime. But we still haven't calculated the perturbations, so in fact, the correlation function of interest. Obviously, to do so, you have to include perturbations and look for perturbed saddle points, because it's the action of the perturbations around the saddle points that will provide me with the probability of different perturbed histories. So that's standard perturbation theory, just slightly generalized to complex cosmologies. The saddle points are complex, the different perturbation modes are complex as well, and they match real perturbed values at the boundary where we evaluate the data. So there are 5 degrees of freedom. There are 2 constraints. You impose those constraints as quantum constraints on the wave function, which means that the wave function really depends only on 1 scalar gauge invariant degree of freedom for the perturbations. Same story as usual. This can be taken as the gauge invariant degree of freedom. The action you can do a mode decomposition. These are the different modes. And the no boundary condition requires those complex perturbations to vanish at the south pole. That's the regularity condition. That condition will give you the state of the perturbation. And the different perturbed histories will be labeled by the absolute value of the subleading component of the perturbation at the south pole. So the perturbations around the saddle points behave as usual in cosmology, except they're complex, but they get to real values at the end. They oscillate when they're inside the horizon, and then they slowly grow, and the gauge invariant variable tends to a constant, which you require to be real at the end.
Prefer the realization which are infinite. They have a kind of inflation, so they have infinite volume.
No, I'll come. So at the level I was doing volume weighting.
Yes.
That was at a homogeneous isotropic level. There are no infinities there. Okay. Finite value of phi naught gives me a finite reheating volume, no infinities. That's right, yes. This is just more of an analogy. I notice that the probability distribution turns around at the threshold for return inflation, but I still have to include. And you will see that volume weighting doesn't really exist in the regime of return inflation when you include perturbations, because that phase space factor, which is proportional to the volume as long as the data that characterizes our Hubble volume are rare in the history, that phase space factor goes to 1 when our Hubble volume is certain to exist, which is, of course, the case when the heat volume goes to 1. Okay, so that is just to illustrate that those perturbations, when you require reality at the boundary, automatically behave classically, just as the background. But because they behave classically, the real part of their Euclidean action stabilizes, and it provides you with the probability distribution of different perturbations. And you will recognize this is just a standard probability distribution that you calculate in normal classical cosmology with a predicted variance for the temperature fluctuations to be V over epsilon, evaluated when the mode leaves the horizon. You can repeat the same analysis for the different directions of the potential. For each of those directions, you will get some probability distribution for the perturbations. Typically, the variance, or at least the dependency of the variance of the perturbations with wave numbers, will depend on the direction where you roll down from. And then, as has been alluded to already, for histories with the regime of return inflation, in other words, for a value of phi naught larger than 1 over square root m on that side, there are modes that leave the horizon which have a large variance, which lead to significant inhomogeneities on very large scales. And as you discussed in many other papers as well, that significantly increases the possible locations of our Hubble volume. There's a sort of phase transition from having histories with a finite reheating volume to having a significant probability of histories with an infinite reheating volume. That phase transition translates in this context into the following. So here you have a smooth sort of probability distribution if you increase phi naught. But when you add perturbations and you increase phi naught beyond that threshold for return inflation, of course the probability distribution is multidimensional then. I mean, you have those different directions of the perturbations. The threshold for return inflation is a lot sharper because the probability for having a truly infinite or a very large reheating volume once you cross the threshold for return inflation is significant, which means that the phase space factor that related probabilities of histories to probabilities of different kinds of Hubble volumes goes to 1 fairly quickly when phi naught becomes larger than the threshold for return inflation. But that means that histories without the regime of return inflation are enormously suppressed, namely by this factor, which is much less than 1 in that regime, compared to histories that have a regime of return inflation. So really, our expectation value here, where we're integrating over the different backgrounds in the different directions, can be approximated as an integral over the different backgrounds starting at the threshold for return inflation. All the histories with just a few evolves in inflation have a negligible contribution.
The procedure for going from a probability for a history to a probability for a Hubble volume becomes not well defined anymore because the reheating surface is in
there. In that regime, there is no distinction between the probability for a history and the probability of a Hubble volume. The weighting of the different histories in that regime is just given by the no-boundary wave function weighting. So this is what the no-boundary wave function, that's the probability of the history starting with that value.
Well, what I meant is, suppose we wanted to know the probability of coming down from the right side compared to the left side.
That's in here. That's the sum over I. The sum over I is the probability of different kinds of Hubble volume. It's right versus left. Mm-hmm. So we have those in there. So, okay, at last I
have all ingredients to give you the result. Oh, one more step, I guess. So we are left with eternally inflating histories here and there. If you focus on all histories there, on one side, as far as local observations on a homogeneous surface, their predictions are identical. Okay, CMB is a local observable on a certain time after the reheating volume. And so the correlation function is independent of the particular starting value of phi naught. But those no boundary weights associated with each side of the potential, I mentioned earlier, are proportional to 1 over the value of the potential. But that means that these no boundary weights, as in my picture, when you go further and further into the regime of return inflation, they exponentially decrease. So this whole integral really can be, roughly speaking, approximated by the value of the potential, by the weight of the history at the threshold of return inflation. That provides you with the dominant contribution to this integral. So roughly, as a rule of thumb, my expectation value will be a sum over histories rolling down from different directions that have a regime of return inflation, weighted by the weight of the history at the threshold of return inflation on each side, multiplied by the expectation value of the observable of interest in that history.
We have regions on the right and regions on the left. It'll be spatially inhomogeneous. Sure. There's some regions on each side, so I'm not sure what the typical history will have both of those types of regions.
Sure, yeah. So I'm having a sum here. So there are various histories contributing. Those different parts are contributing to my result.
But
I repeat that this is not the probability of a history. This is the probability of a huge ensemble of histories with different starting values of the potential, and when traced back in the past, with different transitions. Quantum transitions to the other side, to wherever. It's all summed over by these saddle points. The classicality condition for a history does not hold all the way back. I'm not identifying, this is not the probability of a single history. This is the weight of the class of histories.
So to summarize what goes into this formula, is first of all the selection of inflationary directions of the potential. Secondly, a selection by the phase space factor of directions with the regime of eternal inflation, and thirdly, an approximation of different classes of eternal inflating histories to get sort of a rule of thumb for their relative weight. And that's all you need to get the CLs. The CLs in quantum cosmology are a weighted sum of the CLs of rolling down from the different sides that we make. That's a prediction in quantum cosmology of what we should observe. So it's a truly quantum cosmological result. It involves a sum over cosmologies, sum over backgrounds. Typically, of course, well, maybe
I should. I keep an observer will see all of that. Imagine that these two contributions that are more or less equal. But any given observer, would it see always the CLs corresponding to n squared pi squared, or the CLs lambda pi to the 4, or L equals to 2, you're saying could be the one from...
This is a CL. That's what you compare with observation.
No, no, but...
So the answer to your question is you will see a combination.
Are you sure?
Of course, typically...
That doesn't spell very right.
Typically, there's one size that dominates. Okay, by far.
But in order to answer this question, you don't have to calculate this, but you have to calculate like a variance and correlation coefficients between the S of different L.
Of course.
Answer my question.
Of course. That's right. If the distribution of the CLs is such, imagine two comparable sides with two. Okay, now I should first finish this and I'll come back to your question. That's a prediction of theory. Okay, that's what you compare, but that's what you get. So, the first result is clearly that the direction with the lowest value of the potential at the pressure of eternal inflation provides you the dominant contribution. If you go back to this model, what you predict is an m squared pi squared effect.
The corrections that from the lambda phi to the fourth direction are extremely small and observable. Now, I haven't looked into this, but I'm quite sure you can come up with models where there are several of these PIs that are comparable. And in that case, I think what you predict depends on the shape of the CLs also. Imagine the CLs are wildly different than...
square pi square, where the M differs by 1%.
Right.
So probably they have pretty much the same probability. Right. But we have superb observations and we can tell those, you know, the shape of that. But will we land all our CLs into like one of the M's or half?
I don't think that's the way it works, because if you have such a contribution, then you have a sum of two Gaussians superposed onto each other. And how are you going to tell the difference?
I mean, surely decoherence is the right picture here, and we're either in the history where we came from
square
pi squared
or lambda pi. I would have thought that it's rather than one or the other.
Well, you could have different small regions in one or the other in a bigger, in a large box, so to speak.
I think the situation is more like in ASCFT, where in this Maldacena calculation of ASCFT, where boundary correlators receive contributions, that's what I'm calculating the expectation value, receives contributions from different cell points.
So ordinary people who are going to measure temperature fluctuations perhaps should not use this formula
right.
That you direct.
Well,
should Matthias use this formula?
I would refuse to use it.
Again, couldn't there be a region of the universe that, say, inflated, slow rolled from one domain, and then another region that is completely outside of our, that embedded in the other domain,
right.
And we see the relevant observables for this domain, not a superposition of them.
The CMB consists of many independent modes. Together they improve the probability.
Well, you
have
to,
whatever you're doing.
You see a region corresponding to 60 foldings or what have you, but I'm talking about a region much bigger than that, and outside of what we see, you could have another.
But I'm not. All the outside doesn't really matter, right? It's just calculations of different paths that contribute to.
Well, I think you're superposing those other regions.
Yeah. Of course, because I'm superposing histories. I'm summing saddle points. Okay, so well, I'm
not. This is the conclusion. So the important points are that the boundary wave function provides a measure on classical phase space that selects in fading histories. In histories where we are rare, there's a volume weighting that connects probabilities for histories to probabilities that enter in observables. In single field models of eternal inflation, with one direction, this implies a long period of inflation with Gaussian perturbations. In landscape models of the type like this, the dominant contribution to correlators for local observables like the CLs comes from directions where the condition for eternal inflation holds at the lowest value of the potential, but the other directions give non-Gaussian corrections. Thank you.
Before we start the questions, Costas, can you
I mean, once you said that we're in this eternal regime, I don't really think you fully specified how to compute these probabilities, because the typical history has an infinite number of regions which came down from the right and from the left, and it seems that we need a way of comparing those infinities. And as far as I understand, you haven't given a prescription for that. I mean, every history in the eternal regime has an infinite number of regions of each type. So what is
don't need anything outside of past cycles. The probabilities of different past histories. Some of those past histories could be extremely complicated. Like the ones that you...
Typical history is extremely... The typical history has infinite reheating volume, right?
Yeah, but the infinity doesn't enter if you calculate probabilities inside of past cycles. You agree that there's no...
I didn't see any use of a light cone. What I saw is a use of a saddle point. And I think that saddle point is not a good approximation, as you said, once we get into the eternal regime.
Right.
I don't really understand what's being done.
The effect of the eternal regime is that the phase space factor goes to 1. The phase space factor is the sum of the different possible locations of our hypervolumes. In these extremely complicated histories, mm-hmm. I agree that our hypervolume is certain to exist. But then you're left with the probabilities for the histories.
So you propose to use the saddle point perturbations around many superspace, even in the eternal regime, in order to compute the relative.
I don't dispute that this calculation can be refined, of course. You can include the back reaction of the perturbations, and you will slightly modify the rate of those histories, but the infinities are already built.
Because you restricted to homogeneous perturbations around homogeneous.
No. The result, when the phase space factor goes to 1, that's really the regime of eternal inflation, where I adopt that a typical history has an infinite regime. Otherwise, the result doesn't follow.
Let me ask a very practical and naive question. So imagine you have, say, this superposition of these two models, and the two models may have an S difference, a spectral slope difference. Right.
Yes,
so are you saying that L equal 2 has got an N of 1 and L equal 3 has got an N of 0.95? Or you're saying that different N's of the ALNs? Or because I'm wondering if one can, from the data, put already some constraint on what's the mixture of these two models, because it will give you, in some cases, it will give you a larger variance on the CL. So you try to do a fit, and whatever you do, you get a bad fit because the error you predict from your model is smaller than the actual variance.
Yes.
So you could already put some link.
Right. So
if I understand correctly what's going on.
Naively, I would think that different n's would not, that you still would see rotation in there.
I really think that you would see just from one side. You're calculating the chances that you're going on which side you are, but once you pick one, you measure everything from the one side.
But you're not there to pick one.
But it's a trajectory which is propagating down. You're calculating the probabilities of different trajectories, but we are seeing the small fluctuations around one trajectory, and that one trajectory is choosing some path and an effective potential. And it's a question of which specific path, and that's the whole statistics of outside of the horizon, but there is one specific path, and you don't even need to be coherent for that story. That's just going to be the way it is. So it'll be one of those sides that will be our thing, and we will not have variable NS. That's sort of kind of crazy. It will actually be just one side, one trajectory. But it is true that if you're calculating over the whole ensemble of possible theories and where the path is, then it is true that if you folded all of that in, you would have to enlarge the space of possibilities. A very simple example of that is that a priori, you might say that the larger r associated with lambda phi to the fourth and the smaller one associated with m squared phi squared and all of the other ones, they're equally possible, but there will be a choice, and that will be made, and it's not going to be a superposition of a lambda to phi to the fourth value.
It's not a superposition of theory. It's not a superposition of theory.
So if it's a superposition of theory, it affects our way to do inference. To do inference, right? Because when you want to do
but
inference...
But the cosmology is not a superposition of theory.
If it's a superposition of action, it's a different thing.
By the different potentials that you've been assuming. In other words, the landscape is structure, and the flows on that structure vary. And so there's a probability of the nature of those flows, but given that you're
the point
in
the
pocket, there is only one pocket.
It tests a probability distribution. You have many more.
No, I know. So well, that's what I'm saying.
Well, I think if you were to calculate correlation functions of CS, I think you just calculate excitation, right? But if you enhance your calculation and you calculate correlation functions, you will realize that they are all correlated such that they belong to either one history or the other. It has to be.
I agree that there could be observables that do differentiate between two sides.
Just one point to add to that is that the expectation values which you have calculated are probably not so easy to relate to the volume averages which we measure, or surface average which we measure if we measure CLs. Right? If you calculate the expectation value which is over different histories, it's not clear that when we measure CLs, what we measure the average over all ALM squares.
The average is related to the expectation value.
It is related, but maybe not so directly. Maybe it's really that if you have one volume, one Hubble volume at our disposition for measuring, that it is as Dick said, that in this Hubble volume, one history was taken. And this specific Hubble volume is not a mixture of different histories.
I'll leap into the gap there. Let's thank Thomas again for a very